Hey everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the Valor Podcast. First of all, I just want to say a huge thank you for your love and your support. All right, so in the studio, I have Christine with me today. Christine, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi guys. So I am the love, sex and relationship editor for Valor. Hopefully you've read a few of my pieces. I also have a blog called The Promiscuous Pen. I also run an amazing event called Pen Talk. And I also champion the sexual rights for Christian celibate women.
Yes.
Abstinent as well.
Yes. All that good stuff. All right. So disclaimer, as you probably read by the title, we're going to be talking about sex today. We're going to be talking about Christian female sexuality. But this podcast is by no means endorsing sex before marriage. As Christy mentioned, she champions abstinence and celibacy as scripture, you know, commands that those of us who are not yet married to do so. So when we talk about female Christian sexuality today, we are not endorsing sex before marriage. Okay, so now that that's out of the way, I want to talk to you about your latest article, which is also the title of this podcast, Holy and Horny. So I met with one of my friends yesterday and I mentioned to her what we're going to be talking about today. And her response to me was, but of course. And I mean, for her to say that to me wasn't a surprise because, to be honest, this is something that I personally speak about with my close friends quite a bit. So I was quite surprised to find out from you and also from the responses in your articles that this isn't something that lots of women feel comfortable speaking about. And I don't even mean so much in the church, but within themselves. So That was a shock to me, but I mean, I don't want to project. My experience is a Christian woman experience. It's not the Christian woman experience. Yeah. But could you shed a bit more light as to why Christian women don't feel comfortable acknowledging the fact that they are sexual beings?
I think because for a long time, maybe Christian women feel like they have to repress their sexuality. I think as well, it's a result of like, the purity culture as well. Obviously there's a lot of emphasis on being pure, but I don't think that a lot has been considered around the implications of that theology or that doctrine, and how it actually impacts celibate, abstinent women within the church. And I think as well, sexuality is always viewed through the male lens.
Oh my gosh,
100%. And not enough is, you know, not enough of the females are factored in, I don't think. So I think that's why women feel like they can't speak about it with even their friends, within their circle.
I mean, I think one of the main reasons why I did speak about it within my friends is because I didn't have any other options. Because I remember when I first got saved, and we're talking about 8 years ago, I got saved when I was 20, and celibacy was a challenge for me. And I could not find any content that was talking to me. Everything, absolutely everything, was, like you said, within the male prism. And that can be really difficult because then you're almost made to feel like an other, almost made to feel like you shouldn't have these feelings at all. But I think the Bible's pretty clear that sexual desire is not limited just to men.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really clear on that. Like when you read the Book of Songs of Solomon, for example, it's not a monologue. It's a man and a woman both embracing how they feel about each other. In fact, chapter 1, verse 1 of Songs of Solomon actually begins with the woman. So that goes to show that the Bible definitely doesn't shy away from the fact that women have sexual desire. But for some reason, it seems like the church does. And I don't know if this is something that maybe we have subconsciously inherited from the world, because let's be real, 40, 50 years ago, the idea that a woman had a libido was unheard of. Like, it was like, sex is for male pleasure, it was for female endurance. And I don't know if that has to some extent shaped the way it's viewed in the church, because honestly, the Bible does not present sexual desire to be something that is purely for the man. Even in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, I believe verse 3, Paul talks about the fact that husbands need to acknowledge their wives' desires as much as wives need to acknowledge their husbands. I'm paraphrasing, please do look at the scripture properly yourself. So the Bible's pretty clear on this, but the church isn't.
I think as well, you have to also consider the fact that for a long time, the most prominent figures in the church have been male. Scripture has subconsciously been delivered from the male gaze, from the male prism. So I think that also has a lot to do with the fact that females have kind of been excluded from the conversation. So I don't think we can actually, we definitely have to consider that fact.
Yeah, I feel like we've made a lot of progress, but we still have a long way to go, because what you don't want is women feeling shamed for something that God has given them.
Mm-hmm.
God has given you your sex drive. It's not something that you should be embarrassed by. I mean, obviously, there's a time and a place to embrace that sex drive, and obviously that's within marriage, but it's not something that you should be embarrassed of. And the fact that so many women don't feel comfortable speaking about it, it's quite heartbreaking.
It is. It's really, really sad.
Yeah.
Because you should feel comfortable in
embracing who you are.
Exactly. Like, because, you know, despite the fact that you are Christian, you are a woman and you are therefore sexual. And I think you should embrace that over everything that you've got, particularly when you are abstinent, because there are going to be so many hurdles that you are going to face.
Girl, talk
whether
about
it's meeting men who say they are abstinent,
but their definition's kind of different.
I think as an abstinent female within the church, I think outside of the church, whatever, I think you do need to embrace sexuality holistically, and I think you do that by accepting the fact that you are sexual as well as Christian as well as female.
One of my favorite quotes from your article, and literally when I read this I was rolling on the floor, and it's when you talk about the fact that it's okay to accept that you've been redeemed by the blood of the lamb, but you still want coitus. And I was like, yes I do. And yes, so many other women do, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but again, it's just navigating that, and navigating that with wisdom, and knowing one day I'm going to get some coitus, it's going to be so good, but it's going to be with your husband. But just because you have that desire, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you or that you shouldn't have that desire at all.
I think you should definitely give, if you do have that desire, and if you do feel like you are, I wouldn't say struggling is a weird word to use, but if you do feel like you are constantly having that desire, definitely something to give to God, because
He already knows.
Yeah, exactly. I always say that, you know, we have an empathetic father, and because of that, you can give everything to him, even your libido, you know. So that's not exempt from what you can give to him. He says, cast your burdens unto him, you know. So if that's a burden, then girl, you better cast.
I guess it also, like, right, we do have an empathetic father, but even like in my personal walk, not necessarily even when it comes to, let's say, abstinence, there are certain things that, you know, I might not always immediately think to pray about.
Yeah.
But you're right, God cares about every single thing. I mean, from when he's numbered the amount of hairs on your head, he cares about you. So he cares about your sexual desire. He cares about your frustrations. He cares about these things. And if you're not, like you said, giving it to him, it's not something that you can deal with in the flesh.
Yeah, no, it's
definitely not something that you can deal with in the flesh. So it's something that you definitely do need to commit to God, and something that you do need to put in God's hands. In your article, you talk about the duality of holiness and horniness. Could you expand on that a little bit?
I think when I first had the idea to write the article, I was thinking about how we are made righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And we are made righteous through Christ. So Christ is like a cloak.
Mm-hmm.
We're sinners, but this cloak covers us. And because of this covering, we are righteous. God doesn't see our iniquities, but sees Christ, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I explain the duality of holy and horny. Because of Christ's righteousness, we are holy. But because we are human and we have these feelings and we have these emotions that are deep-seated and that God considered good when he gave them to us, you know, we can also be horny. Now, a lot of people have kind of condemned the use of the word horny.
I guess it's because of the connotations.
Yeah.
But it's the reality of the situation.
It's the reality, you know. Yeah. And I think, what other way to describe the feeling that you get when, you know, there's no other way.
You could say arousal,
but then arousal as well, is, you know.
But then that's the whole issue, is the fact that sex is something that has been created by God, but it's been distorted by the world to the extent that even acknowledging the fact that sexual desire is a thing, it's instantly given a negative connotation, which is sad, because
it is very sad. I get a lot of weird and wonderful emails.
I can imagine.
Because of my articles. But there was, this person didn't actually comment on the blog. I saw it in someone's Curious Cat.
Okay.
And yeah, random. The guy was like, I think it was a guy. Yeah, it was a guy. I remember he wrote he. So the guy was like, telling my friend, who's Curious Cat was, your friend's doing this holy and horny thing. Don't know why she's forcing it. Why would she even use the word horny?
And I was just, why is she forcing it?
And I was just like, you know, I think a part of me was like, maybe I shouldn't do the event. But then the other part of me was like, no, there are women out there who need, you know, a space to talk about what they've wanted to talk about.
I mean,
for
men,
a long
men
time.
Have this space. Exactly. I think it's only right that women
men have
this space,
space
too.
In their circles. Men have the space in the church.
Yeah.
Men have the space in the barbershop.
Yeah.
You know, and
have you ever been to the hairdresser and someone's discussing that? Let's be real. It doesn't happen
never.
For women. So.
It doesn't happen for women. So I'm happy to create a space for women, even if people deem horny to be a ungodly word.
I mean, I just love the alliteration personally. Because really and truly, there's no other way to describe it.
I don't think there is. I don't think there is. And I think, like you said, that's the problem when we start to attach negative connotations to words. Horny is just another word. Like,
I mean, okay, it's a colloquial term, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it is slang, but then
everyone knows what it means, and you're trying to educate people, which is that in itself, it's a wonderful thing that you're doing, but that's also sad that you have to educate people
on
the fact that
the
women
reality
have
of it,
sex
yeah.
drives. Like, this should not be revelation, but apparently it is.
It is really, really crazy. Holy and horny. Holy and horny.
That is the duality of it.
That is a duality, thank God.
All right, so now that we have addressed and demystified Christian female sexuality, and like we already said at the beginning, we're not endorsing sex before marriage, but how do you navigate it? You're a single woman, you have a very, very high sex drive, you're not married. How do you navigate that?
I think the first thing to do is to admit that you have a high sex drive. I'm not saying attend like an AA meeting or whatever, but I'm saying...
I'm done. I have a high libido.
I'm saying admit it to yourself, you know? I think the best way to deal with issues that pertain to you personally is sort of just, you know, first of all, just admit that you have a problem, quote unquote.
Mm. But do we want to see it as a problem, though?
No, so that's why I'm like, air quotes, you can't see me, but I'm air quoting. It's not a problem as such, but it's a problem for you at present because there's no way for you to unleash that drive that you have.
No legitimate way.
You could spend your days doing things that you shouldn't be doing, but there's no way to actually unleash that sex drive. So you're still repressing it for some time. I know a lot of people don't like the idea of, or don't like the thought of sexual repression. They don't like to use that word repression, but that's ultimately what you're doing until marriage. You're repressing yourself until, but obviously on a day-to-day it gets better because, you know, you cast your cares onto burden, onto Jesus. You know, his yoke is light. So every single day it should hopefully get better, but you are repressing your sex drive, so it is a problem. So I think admitting that you have a high sex drive is the first thing. I think secondly, don't entertain men who sleep around. Like, just don't, because you tend to form attachments with people subconsciously and even consciously as well. And by entertaining them, you sort of entertain also the idea of being with them intimately.
So when you say
well.
Entertained, you mean being in relationships with?
Yeah, or, being relationships with, or I think even just entertaining on a more general level. So like maybe
entertaining
not,
conversations.
Yeah, entertaining conversations, because I don't know, I just feel like once you form that attachment, it's going to be very hard for you to kind of wean yourself off that individual. So I would say, you know, don't entertain men who are not on the same celibacy journey as you. Another practical step I would say is be quite upfront as well. So if you are dating, be upfront. Like, if you have to say it on the first date, say it on the first date. That's if you're comfortable enough saying it on the first date. But I do think you need to be really upfront with people. You will find men who will say, yeah, they're fine with it. 2 weeks down the line,
it's very clear they're
like,
not fine with it.
Hey, they're trying to change your mind, change your terms. And we don't negotiate terms. Negotiate terms, not on celibacy. Everything else, maybe you can negotiate the beard.
Within
or,
reason.
You know,
negotiate the beard?
Negotiate the beard.
Excuse me?
Maybe. I mean, how
personally,
many, how
I
many? How, come on, how many Christian black celibate men are there? If that's what you're after, so you could negotiate the bid, but I think you shouldn't negotiate terms when it comes to celibacy. So I don't think you should go out I don't think you should not be upfront about it. I think first date, second date, be upfront. Hey, I'm abstinent. I don't plan on having sex until marriage. Are you cool with that? Yes. Cool. If you're not, bye. Kind of thing.
Have you said that to someone before?
Yeah. What was the response like? Well, it wasn't like, bye. But it was like, so I'm abstinent. I don't have any plans on
penetration sex with anytime you soon.
At all until you put a ring on my finger and the reception's done. And
you said the reception's done.
I think so, something like that.
And so straight after the reception, you're not even waiting to get back to your hotel.
And the thing is, I don't even wait, you know. I don't even wait till first date. It's like anytime I sense interest, I'm like, hey, so by the way,
but I mean, you're talking about Christian guys, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But even in saying that, it's quite important to highlight because even someone can be a Christian, but they might not necessarily have
exactly,
the same.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're going to meet a lot of, that's one thing I really hope to touch on as well, like through my writing, but you're going to meet a lot of men who, you know, say they're Christian and say they're saved, but they still haven't dealt with that aspect of their life. To keep it, you know, all the way real, you will meet Christian men who are not celibate. And you're going to have to say bye.
Yeah.
Or keep them as friends.
Yeah. No, it's important because especially if yourself, you know that you have a high sex drive, you need to be really mindful about the company you keep, the content you listen to. Like when I first got saved, I was a big Sex and City fan. Like
I've actually watched that show twice over.
Seriously. I don't want to admit how many times I've watched it. But I had the
how
whole...
How many times, Emmy?
I'm not even sure. But basically, there was a point in my life that if I saw a still from an episode of Sex and City, I could tell you which season, which episode that was.
What?
I went in. So wow, I had something. A huge... I had like the shoebox of season 1 to 6 of Sex and City. And after I got saved, I still watched it. And then I was just like, you know what? I don't really think this is helping me right now. So I had to get rid of it. I gave it all to charity. I mean, to be honest, I probably shouldn't have given it to charity. I should have just got rid of it. But anyways, I gave it to charity. And that was just one of the things that I had to kind of distance myself from as I started this journey with Jesus. I mean, obviously, when you first get saved, I think the important thing to bear in mind is that your spirit is instantly recreated, but it's not like your mind suddenly has amnesia.
Yeah.
It's not like you suddenly forget that you had sex before, that like certain things. You don't forget those things, but you need to start consciously renewing your mind. So if it means not listening to certain songs, all that's going to do is plant seeds in your heart. And those seeds might not necessarily manifest today or tomorrow, but slowly but surely, the more you keep on feeding yourself on content which is not conducive to celibacy, is not conducive to abstinence, or just anything that glorifies God, period, at some point that seed is going to bloom.
Yeah.
So you need to be really, really mindful of what you are planting in yourself.
I think you need to be incredibly honest with yourself. And I think a lot of the time we tend to sort of feign spirituality. And I think that...
Really?
I think so. Like, I think when it comes to sex, I think sometimes we tend to think that we are, you know, immune to... Maybe it's because of, you know, it's come as a result of a long history of not talking about sex. So because of that, we think we're immune to sexual desires. And as a result of that, we're not really honest with ourselves. But I think in having this conversation, you really do need to say to yourself, okay, what are my sexual triggers?
Yes, that's something we should talk about.
Like, triggers. What are your sexual triggers? Do I have... Because not every Christian abstinent woman is going to have the same...
Yeah.
Degree of libido, if I can put it that way. You know, some people are not triggered by anything, you know, and then there are some women who are triggered by a lot of things, and then there are some women who are, you know, in the middle where sometimes they're triggered, sometimes they're not, depending on the day. So I think you just need to have that really honest conversation with yourself as to how you're triggered, whether you do have like a high libido or a medium libido, if that makes any sense.
I get what you mean.
I think that's literally it for me when it comes to celibacy and being practical and taking practical solutions. You just have to be honest.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the things that has really helped me on this journey, and I'm not going to pretend it's easy, it definitely isn't. I'm not going to pretend I haven't, you know, slipped up a couple of times, maybe more than a couple of times, but we thank God for his grace, is I always think, you know, if I can't be faithful to God now, how am I going to be faithful to my husband? and God is more important than my husband. And obviously I don't want to be an unfaithful wife when I do get to that stage. So that really, really helps me to remain on this journey of, you know, wanting to honor God with my body and wanting to honor God with my mind, and not neglecting the fact that, yes, I am a sexual being. Yes, I am someone who has a very, very high sex drive. But at the end of the day, that is not license to dishonor God.
Of course.
You know, just because I'm ovulating, it's not licensed to dishonor God. Just because I feel stressed, it's not licensed to dishonor God.
Yeah.
So I guess when you just have that at the forefront of your mind, which is just, I want to please God in every single area of my life, with my body, with my thoughts, with my motives, that really, really does help you to not neglect the fact that you're a sexual being, but just not be purely dictated by the fact that you're a sexual being, because you're governed by the Holy Spirit, not by your sex drive. Well, that's how we're supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously we're supposed to rid our lives of our flesh, and we're supposed to be dictated by the Spirit. So I think another really good thing to do is just to see the Bible as a mirror and sort of hold it up to your life. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, a fruit of the Spirit is self-discipline. Not self-discipline.
Self-control.
Self-control. Yeah. And patience. Patience and self-control are fruits of the Spirit. So if you are not demonstrating those fruits as it pertains to your sexuality, then give it to God, you know?
100%. I agree. So, Christine, where can we find you? So you've mentioned your blog.
Yes. So you can find my blog on The Promiscuous Pen. Make sure you spell promiscuous right, because I struggled for a long time to spell promiscuous correctly. So make sure you spell it right. So thepromiscuouspen.com. You can also find me ranting about relationships on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is I am Crow. So that's the letter I, the letter A, the letter M, the letter C, the letter R, the letter O, the letter E. I am Crow.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for listening to the second episode of the Vala podcast. You can find us at Vala Magazine on Instagram, Facebook, if you're still using that thing, Twitter. You can also find me, Dami, at Dami_Abajingin, last name is Abajingin, on Instagram and on Twitter as well. I'm really, really trying with Twitter this year. We're committed to it. Oh, now I've said that out loud, I have to be committed to it. So yeah, as always, love to hear from you. This podcast is for you.